This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us today. Given the number of families with two parents who work outside the home and the number of single parents who also are working outside the home, do parents spend more or less time with their kids than parents did 40 years ago? Well, the answer may surprise you. Sociologist Suzanne Bianchi and colleagues at the University of Maryland have found that working parents are spending as much and perhaps more time interacting with their children than the parents of the 1960s. Professor Bianchi chairs the Department of Sociology at the University of Maryland. She's a family demographer whose work focuses on changes in the lives of American women and the impacts of those changes for women, families, and workplaces. She is also the mother of three children, and she is our guest in this portion of the program. Suzanne Bianchi is visiting the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus to give the spring 2008 lecture for the Pampered Chef Family Resiliency Program here at the U of I. She will speak at 7 o'clock tonight in the Knight Auditorium at the Spurlock Museum. Her talk is entitled Gender Roles and Use of Time, the Subtle Parenting Revolution in American Family Life. Listeners, you're invited to join us this afternoon with your questions and comments. How has your family balanced the demands of childcare, employment, and running a household? We look forward to your telephone calls. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Our guest, Suzanne Bianchi, is the author or co-author of six books. She is co-author most recently with John Robinson and Melissa Milkey of Changing Rhythms of American Family Life. Again, the phone number is 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Great to be here.
So, mom of three, married mom of three, how do you do it?
Well, as I said before we started the show, with difficulty, but I have to say that three ages 17 to 23 is quite a bit easier than it was when they were ages 4 to 10.
Yeah. I wonder how you negotiated your way along, you know, from beginning to now where you are. You're sort of comfortably, they're mostly grown up.
Right. I mean, I think that what parents do is take it day by day.
It's on the job training,
right,
isn't it?
Year by year. Just when you get something set in place, often it changes. Your children are going through developmental changes and you have to adjust. But what we found most fascinating, I think, about what we did in terms of our research was that we really expected to find that there would have been a decline over time in sort of how much time parents had with children. It really looks like parents today work very hard to protect family time.
And did that discovery surprise you at all?
It surprised us because we could certainly track the increase in mothers' labor force participation, and we saw in housework exactly what we expected, a sharp decline almost hour for hour. But time with children stayed high and, in fact, is probably as high today as it ever was.
Mm. We already have a listener waiting to talk with us, so let's go and take this call. A listener on a cell phone, line 4. Hi.
Hi. I was interested in how you have quantified the quality of, or qualified the quality of the time that folks are spending with their children. Also, how children's schedules is affecting time with their parents these days with after-school activities and tutoring and this and that.
Our means of data collection are something called time diary datas, where we ask people really to take us through their day, the previous day. And by accumulating across people, across times of the year, et cetera, we get a picture of how people, parents in this case, spend their time. In terms of quality, one piece of the research that may address some of the questions you may have in your mind is we tried to look at multitasking. And there is certainly a way in which parents today report more multitasking, doing childcare along with something else. So you could say, well, perhaps they're not as focused on children as they were in the past. We expected to see that multitasking to be doing housework or some other chores, it turned out that what it was more often was a discretionary kind of leisure sort of activity, suggesting that one of the ways in which parents have changed their lives is either they're more willing to take their children along with them as they do their own leisure, or perhaps as you're suggesting with the they have changed their leisure to be more child accommodating, and that may be partly the second point you made, which is taking children to soccer games and all kinds of children oriented activities.
Just an odd question, but the first thing that came to my mind was, how many families actually manage, or how many days a week do families actually manage to sit down to a meal together?
Well, there we, our estimate would be four, something like four on average, which is seems relatively high when you hear about how many times they're not. Now, that estimate for us in our book, I think, doesn't actually come from the diary itself. It's from sort of parents' reports, so they could be perhaps overestimating how often they were sitting down. What surprised us was, though there we do find a difference between parents where both are employed and where they're not. The difference is those where one person, usually the mother, isn't employed, were reporting 5 days a week. So in either group, it's relatively high.
Yeah. That's actually, I expected to hear one or maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. So tell us a little bit more about the Time Diary study. Who participated, how many, and for how long?
What we, it's nationally representative study. Those who participate are, in our studies, at 2000, there were 1,200 participants from across the U.S., somewhat fewer in a study we did in the 90s. And then we went back in the U.S., they've done these kinds of studies roughly at 10-year intervals, 1965, 75, 85, 95. So we looked across those data sets. And you typically you start people, you say, okay, let's start at midnight yesterday and walk them through the day. No data collection is perfect. But here the idea is that we cognitively are used to kind of reporting out activities sequentially. So it's cognitively easier than if I said to you, how much time did you spend with your child yesterday? You'd come up with a number, but actually that's a difficult task mm-hmm. to do. You might have been with your child in the morning and then after school and then later. And also it forces respondents to adhere to the 24-hour constraint. They can still lie to us, but if they exaggerate one kind of activity, they have to, scale down another.
Yeah. So it's to cheat, so to speak, involves more work.
Right.
It's,
and typically we don't tell them. We just say we're interested in how people are spending their time. We don't tell them that, oh, we're going to be looking at you as a parent or you as childcare or whatever, so that they're not cued in exactly on what it is researchers might be using the data collection.
Well, that's interesting. I wonder if you also had other sources, other sources of information for how parents feel about what it means to be a good parent.
We did. One of the things we tried to so the diary just gives you kind of an accounting of how people what they did.
Uh-huh.
I was working with a social psychologist, my colleague Melissa Milkey, who was very interested in what are the meanings people attach to what they do. So after we did the diary, and we asked questions about how people felt about their time, things like, you know, how they felt about whether they were spending enough time with their children or with their spouse or on themselves, whether they felt rushed, whether they always felt like they were multitasking. And there we certainly do see very high reports of kind of the feeling of the speed up of life and time stresses.
Not enough hours in the day.
Right, yeah. Right. Not enough time with your children or with your spouse or to do the things you want to do.
And is that pretty much universal?
Universal, but certainly, particularly the feeling of not having enough time for yourself, those reports are particularly high for women. It doesn't matter whether they're employed outside the home or not. You could imagine that whether you're home all day with children or whether you're in the workforce part of that day, constantly other people's needs come before your own.
Yeah. Well, what about dads?
Dads, interestingly to us, they were more likely than mothers to report that they didn't have enough time with their children. And there, it's really about labor force hours. They spend more time away from their children. When you control for that, the gender difference disappears. But dads are very, very likely to report that they don't have enough time with the children.
It's interesting. I looked over your book, Changing Rhythms of American Family Life, and it's interesting that you report that mothers' time with children dipped from 1965 to 1975, then increased.
Right.
And for dads, the increase in time spent with children came in the mid-1980s. What's going on there?
Yeah, what we see in the diary is, first we see an increase for dads, for men, in sort of doing housework kinds of things during the period when mothers are really increasing their labor force participation. It's only been in the last, say, in the last 20 years that you start to really see for dads this pretty sizable increase in time with children. Now, it could be that, these are cross sections across time. These are different dads, a new generation of dads, sort of understanding that, a good dad is one who not only brings home the bacon, but also is with the children. Maybe there's just a lag in response to changes that certainly mothers undertook in terms of increasing labor force participation earlier. I think the dip that you see for mothers between 65 and 75, that charts pretty well going from large baby boom households to smaller baby bust households. But then we expected to see it stay down there since, the average household size has stayed low. And that has increased for mothers in the last few years.
I would suspect, but I could be wrong, that from 1965 to 1975, we see the number of divorces on the increase, and we see women entering the workforce either out of a sense of wanting to do more than what they had been doing up to that point, or maybe as a way of bringing home income, which was required or was desirable.
Right. Those trends are definitely true as well, that you see divorce rates sort of increasing and then peaking actually around 1980. So they are in play probably during that dip period. And the biggest increase in female labor force participation was really roughly 1970-ish to 1990, and then it's kind of leveled off since that time.
Yeah. We have another caller who would like to talk with you, so let's take this call. A listener in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi. Actually, I was going to, you mentioned that issue when you brought up these other factors in terms of your co-researcher. But I've been in homes in that regard where there's, three young children, and there's this big push to get the dinner done, and that kind of thing. And you feel so much... how would I put it, anxiety or, stress, you just sort of feel it. And I don't think it's a very good thing, I know you wouldn't be able to particularly get at the amount of this, but, nobody's really relaxing. It's like they're at work, and then one will read to one child and the other will read the other and they rotate and the whole bit. And, and then also sometimes when you're at the fast food places, you see these people coming in, they may have the meal at home, but... in terms of the cooked meal. So whether you want to comment on that or not. One question I have, and this may not be in, your particular interest area, but I picked up, I read so many things, but in terms of people at home, in terms of discipline, children, that still, spare the rod and, spare the rod and spoil the child, that I don't know, it seemed to be a fair percentage of people that still believe in this. Is this correct, or... Maybe this is not in your particular area.
In sparing the rod and spoiling the child?
Yeah, in other words, it's the idea that they're usually still using some violence to discipline children, that kind of thing.
I think we did have a question on whether parents used spanking, but we didn't get much. We weren't sure we could trust the responses we got. One thing that's of interest to me, given your comments, which I think are probably accurate, that in a lot of families, dinner time isn't particularly relaxing. Parents may be getting everybody together because they think that's what they're supposed to do, but it is a stressful time of the day. And they may have a nostalgia for dinners past. I don't know. I grew up in a family of six, and our dinner times weren't always relaxing either. But we had a set of questions after the diary where we were asking people things about their enjoyment of parenting. And interestingly, even when we asked about things that parents complain about, like driving children places, we had a 10-point scale and basically got no variation. Everybody was an 8, 9, or 10 on that. So whether it's social desirability and those kinds of questions or what, parents at least think that they're supposed to respond and do respond, that they enjoy very much all these dimensions of parenting, that they show their children praise and give them hugs and kisses, et cetera, on a daily basis. And yet we know that we also have these other reports that they feel too little time for themselves, too little time for spouse. So we know there are stresses in those families as well.
But I think the stress, years ago, I was invited to a family. There were 12 children, that kind of thing. And, it was like Thanksgiving. They said, okay, you get the food the first time around because there's none after, Mm-hmm. But everything was organized, and there was stress, but it seems to me when you have, both of them working, and if they're in a very stressful job themselves, when they come home, to me it's sort of a different kind of stress. That stress and plus adding the additional stress of trying to get things done and getting the kids to bed, that I don't just overall, but maybe, maybe that's not a big factor with a lot of families, but it seems to me that must be a fair percentage. So I'll just go off. Thanks for the show. Very good.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. I think that the caller is hitting on something that I think parents feel. For a long time, we've been hearing about quality time. And you want it to be time, and you want it to be good time, and there are a number of things that parents are anxious about. It seems parents are anxious about, and this is anecdotal, anxious about the future for their children. So they're preparing them with enrichment activities, those that are able to. And I think that there's also worries about, are my kids safe? We're seeing parents who are able provide their children with cell phones and the like.
Right. One of the things that we argue in the book. So for us, one of the questions were, why would mothers push so hard to keep spending time with children when they've added work? Why not slow down or whatever? And we argue that just because mothers enter into the labor force doesn't mean that they shed all their feeling of responsibility, that a good mother is a mother who's always there for their children. So you have that kind of in play for mothers, what some have called intensive mothering, the cultural contradictions of motherhood, this thing that good mothers are there for their children. Why would fathers, we find fathers' labor force rates stay very high. Why would they add the stress of spending even more time with children? And again, our argument is that, just because fathers sort of get it and know that increasingly a good dad spends time with children, they don't lose this responsibility that a good part of being a dad is providing. So in some sense, they have to add hours onto their provider role. And all this happens, this taking on additional roles without losing the others, at a time when, from our perspective, child-rearing investments are what parents think they need to do for children, maybe because they are concerned about lengthening investments needed to get them through schooling and into the labor market. It's sort of ramped up what parents think they have to do. And we talk about some of the things that you've just mentioned as factors that propel parents perhaps to spend more time with children today. One is this concern of the future and investments that children might need. Another is, though I would say purely demographic, and that is that, not purely, but people today, more couples, more parents have children later in life after they've done more things. They've finished schooling, they've traveled, they've often they time children at sort of the point in their life where that's what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. They've decided to do children and maybe do them in a big way. And it's more possible, perhaps, to take a child with you on even an adult kind of outing when you have one or two children than when you had the family size I talked about. I grew up in a family of six. And then the third thing is, again, something you hit on, I think, which is less sanguine. Parents, I think, are worried about the safety of their children. In urban environments like I live in Washington, D.C., you can be worried about traffic. So you don't just send a young child to the playground. You accompany that child to a playground. They're also worried about crime and other sorts of things, which predisposes them to take children places where in the past they may have allowed children to move about more freely on their own. Mm.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon is sociologist Suzanne Bianchi. She chairs the Department of Sociology at the University of Maryland. She's a family demographer whose work focuses on changes in the lives of American women and the impacts of those changes for women, families, and the workplace. She's visiting the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus to give the spring 2008 lecture for the Pampered Chef Family Resiliency Program here at the U of I. She'll speak at 7 o'clock this evening in the Knight Auditorium at the Spurlock Museum. Her talk is titled Gender Roles and Use of Time, the Subtle Parenting Revolution in American Family Life. And let me just tell you a little bit about the Pampered Chef Family Resiliency Program. It's a partnership between the Pampered Chef and the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences here at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Listeners, if you'd like to join us this afternoon with a question, a comment, give us a call. Maybe you'd like to share with us how your family has balanced the demands of childcare, employment, and running a household. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL and 800-222-9455. That's the toll-free number, 800-222-WILL. Well, what kind of differences do you see between one-parent households, two-parent households? What kind of differences do you see between households of varying educational attainment and also class?
One of the things that we show is that the two-parent, single-parent, in terms of direct doing things with children, the trends that are for married mothers are similar for single mothers. You know, if anything, they're doing as much or more. Where they're having a harder time, I think, is we also look at what's the total amount of time that a parent spends with a child over, say, the course of a day, a course of a week. And there's been a decline for single mothers, whereas there's been, if anything, a bit of an increase for married mothers. So if you add together the fact that fathers are spending more time with children, in two-parent families, if anything, kids are getting a little more from mothers and more from fathers at the same time that single mothers are not able to kind of give quite as much time as they were in the past. So there may be a growing bifurcation that is somewhat worrisome in terms of what single mothers, they're doing the best they can, but what they can provide. They've got to both provide money and time on a daily basis, one person usually doing that. In terms of class, we looked at educational differences, and there what we see, there has been some concern that with increased income inequality, we may be seeing growing bifurcation there. We don't see a growing difference. What we do see is that college-educated people across time tend to report higher amounts of time with children than less well-educated individuals, parents. But that differential has remained fairly constant across time. both groups are increasing the time that they spend with their children. It's just that there is an educational difference with more highly educated parents always at any given point in time spending a bit more.
Mm. Parents working outside the home, are they putting in more time at their place of employment than parents did a generation ago?
Well, certainly, actually, the actual ones who are employed, the big change is really so many more, a much higher proportion employed. It's not so much that the working mom of 1965 was working a lot less than the working mom of 2000. It's really more that so many more mothers are working in 2000 than was the case in 65. So that, I don't know if that's the big change.
Yeah.
Working moms in 65 had a lot, you know, of the same kind of pools, but they were a much smaller percentage of the population.
Yeah.
One of the ways we show how could this happen over time, though, is that at any given point in time, 65 or now, a mom who's at home full time will be spending more time than a mom who's employed with children. She'll typically, a mom who's home full time will have younger kids on average. What happens, though, now is the mom who's employed, she's reporting the same levels of time that the non-employed mom, the mom at home, reported in the past. It's as if everything's ratcheted up for mothers, which is quite interesting, actually, to think about.
Yeah. When my mother entered the workforce, now I'm a baby boomer in my 50s here now, but when my mother entered the workforce, she did it first at part-time. And then as we were all a little bit older, she went into the workforce full-time. How are women juggling that kind of decision in terms of how much time am I going to spend on the job? Am I looking for part-time work or full-time job or work I can do at home?
Yeah, there's still, you know, there more mothers work full-time now. That's increased. But it's still the case that particularly for married mothers, relatively high percentages of them take a year or so sometime out when their children are really young, or they work part-time hours. So when we look at how many hours parents are working by age of children, you see a really strong gradient for moms. You know, there many fewer of them are working full-time if they have young children, and then it just ramps up as children get to be school age. Dads, it doesn't vary across the ages of children, so they're still pretty much, you know, fully in the labor force. One of the surprising things, though, to us that some people find surprising is that we do argue in the book that it takes a combination of those unpaid hours in the home, housework, child care, and those paid hours in the labor force to really give families what they need. And if you look at mothers and fathers and you add up the unpaid and the paid, they're really quite similar. Some people, you know, we hear about mother's second shift. These parents are busy whether they're male or they're female. The dads are doing a greater share of their 60-some hours a week in paid work than are the moms, but they're doing fairly similar amounts of work.
Is the workplace changing as a result of parents who want to be parents in addition to workers?
This is an interesting question because there's a lot of discussion about this and a feeling, I think, that it's not changed very much, that many workplaces, especially for high-skilled workers, sort of want you to give over to the job, devote yourself to the job. And working part-time isn't always a possibility for those who want to do that. And indeed, there's some people are questioning, there has been some slight drop-off in labor force participation of mothers and some slight drop-off in the percent employed in the 6 months after birth in just the last few years. People are wondering whether that signals some sort of change or whether we are getting to the point where workplaces will have to stand up and take notice. But I think workplaces are slow to sort of change to the realities that face most families today.
Mm. And the changes in gender roles at home, have they had an impact in the workplace? Where are we in terms of gender equality on the job? If dad is a go-ahead guy at home, he's likely perhaps to understand, the issue in the workplace?
Right. I mean, I think of it intergenerationally, so that it is the case probably that today, at the very tops of organizations, this is changing, but you still probably have men who had stay-at-home spouses, and that, over time you sort of replace, at least proportionately, those in leadership roles with those who've had more experiences with trying to do a dual earner sort of marriage, or those who have daughters who are trying to do that kind of thing. And so change comes, but it comes gradually and slowly. And the fact that we still do, we still do see mothers but not fathers making these decisions to cut back on time in the labor force to rear children. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to do this kind of work in the home, means that also sort of slows this path towards, if we expected to have men and women looking exactly the same, I don't think I'm going to see that in my lifetime. There may be slow movement towards that, but men and women still, it's at the point of having children that their trajectories diverge.
Yeah. I have a cousin. He and his wife actually took turns staying at home working, and it worked beautifully for their kids. And I haven't talked with him for some time, but it would be interesting to ask him how that conversation went, with the birth of the first child.
Right. It's interesting. I mean, one of the things about mothers make a labor force decision, it works during having children, then children exit the home too. The next project I'd like to do, there has to be sometimes a renegotiation of both what you will do, but also what the marriage will look like once you no longer have these time demands that were so dramatic when children were young.
Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Yeah, you just mentioned the issue. Did your study get at how much time the couple spend together, especially, to work on their relationship, that they can get away once in a while, that kind of thing? Because they're very important models for the children, that kind of thing. So did you get at that dimension or not?
We did look at that. We asked a question. Time is finite, right? So if child care is staying relatively high and mother's labor force participation has gone up, where's the time coming from? And one of the things the diary collection does allow us to look at is who people are spending time with. And we do see a decrease in the amount of time couples spend together. Now, they can be flexing their schedule so that they cover children, but that means less time, total time together, and less time alone. So that is one of the costs, I think, of this. The other place we looked at was what happens with time that you spend with friends and relatives. And there it's particularly for single mothers that we see a decline over time, less time in, say, circa 2000 than in the past spent with friends and relatives. And the way I view that is that's where the time is coming from, that these, as you suggest, may be important things for both the couple relationship and for the signaling to the children, but those are some of the things that are declining and giving way.
Hmm. I think it would be interesting to look at, and maybe you or someone at University of Maryland or sociologists elsewhere are looking at the role of grandparents. We're living longer, and I seem to see more involvement on the part of grandparents in the lives of grandchildren.
There is some evidence from data collections from the U.S. Census Bureau that suggests that grandparent care has increased. In some cases, it's actually stepping in when the parent generation isn't able to take care of children. The one factor that works somewhat against that is geographic mobility. It's also mm-hmm. the case that over time, grandchildren are likely to live farther from their grandparents. But this is a really interesting area, too, because one of the things that's happening is that the decline in fertility from large baby boom families to smaller families that happened is just now hitting the grandparent generation. So you're having a movement of people who had three or four sets of grandkids down to those who are having mm-hmm. just a couple of sets of grandkids. And I don't really know. Do grandparents make more of an effort when they have fewer grandchildren yeah. to stay in touch
yeah.
than when they have many sets and one set lives near them, but maybe two or three live elsewhere? There's some really interesting changes, I think, potential changes going on in that grandparent generation.
Yeah. Well, if you look at family get-togethers today, the little kids are in the minority. You know, it's the baby boom generation who are taking up all the seats at the table, and all eyes are on these wonderful little precious children.
Right.
So that's got to be a change. The other thing, a guest I had on the program not all that long ago, but it's been long enough I can't remember his name or what the topic was exactly, but he seemed to think that grandparents might decide to retire to move to where children and grandchildren are.
That is an interesting, I haven't seen a good study of how much, you certainly hear anecdotally about that grandparents tend to co-locate with some set of grandchildren. And grandparents would increasingly have the economic resources to move and to be where they want to be. I haven't seen a good study of that, but actually, I've become increasingly interested. I think this whole issue of the geographic spread and proximity of adult children and their parents are probably really important, both for thinking about caregiving down to grandparents, but also later caregiving mm-hmm. up. So the caregiving that grandparents give to their grandchildren, but later on, what kind of obligation will those grandchildren feel towards grandparents? And when they later on in life yeah. have health difficulties.
Yeah. Well, when that relationship between grandchild and grandparent works, it's a great thing. It's mm-hmm. it's a great benefit to grandchildren and to their grandparents. Recently, we had a guest on the program who's written a book on navigating the relationship between adult children and parents. This was really recently, so I recall her name, Jane Isay, the title of the book that she wrote, Walking on Eggshells. And we talked about the fact that I have to be careful with this, with somebody like you. It seems that in a good number of families, children remain within the family now until they're well into their 20s, whereas I left and didn't look back very much at all when I was 19.
There is an increase in young adults being in the parental home. Partly that has to do with there's this lengthening of the time between when kids finish, say, high school and get married. So there's just a longer period of time before young adults settle into jobs, into their own marital relationships, et cetera. And during that period of time, I think there is an increased likelihood that they never leave, they live at home, they may even go to school, college if they go at home, or that they're back and forth. So there's definitely this elongated period of time where parents are negotiating with not young children anymore, but adult children. And I often tell my students, think about it, but the other thing that happens is that most of your relationship with your child is going to be during adulthood. I mean, given
right.
life expectancies,
right.
as well as your relationship with siblings is going to be with siblings as adults. And I think that social scientists are becoming increasingly aware that we need more study of those. We focused a lot on the kinds of families we focus on in this book, families with kids under 18. Those family relationships that were important throughout life, and we know less about them in adulthood.
Yeah. You got to wonder what changes all this might mean for families over the next couple of decades. You know, the people who are now in their upper teens, lower 20s, when they come to be parents? What will their lives look like? How will they do it?
Right. Will they decide that they're going to be just as involved in their parents, or will they eschew that and say, I'm not going to be like my parents hovering over everything that this child does? Because there's sort of the two, you hear both, you know,
yeah.
I'm going to reject. Sometimes you hear, if you interview these men who are more involved with their own children, they're saying, I'm going to be in my child's life in a way my father wasn't. You know, is that going to be the model going forward, or are we going to have some backlash?
Or we're going to have adult children saying, I couldn't breathe, you know?
Right.
I got to let we need to let our children find their own ways.
The other thing you mentioned earlier that I think is interesting to think about, you mentioned cell phones. There's been such a change in technology that allows people to be in communication in ways that they weren't in the past. So the child who went off to college in the past, you know, could write a letter, perhaps, if they were far enough away. I mean, now, being in cell phone contact, email a contact, et cetera, it's a very different sort of world of communication.
Yeah, yeah. It used to be maybe a payphone in the hall of your first apartment building
right.
or in school, and today it's in your pocket, and you can say, I'll give mom a call or give dad a call. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, sociologist Suzanne Bianchi. She and her colleagues at the University of Maryland have found that working parents are spending as much, perhaps more time, interacting with their children than the parents of the 1960s. That might surprise us, given the number of families with two parents who work outside the home and the number of single parents who are also having to manage balance work life and home life. We have a few minutes left in this portion of the program. If you'd like to join us this afternoon with a question, a comment, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, and toll-free 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Our guest is the author or co-author of a number of books. She's the co-author most recently with John Robinson and Melissa Milkey of Changing Rhythms of American Life. She's visiting the Champaign-Urbana area to give the Spring 2008 lecture for the Pampered Chef Family Resiliency Program here at the U of I. She'll speak this evening at 7 o'clock at the Spurlock Museum in the Knight Auditorium. The talk, Gender Roles and Use of Time, the Subtle Parenting Revolution in American Family Life. Well, you have a 20-something-year-old?
I do. I have a 23-year-old daughter, a 21-year-old son, and a 17-year-old son.
So do you talk with them about these issues? Where are the, especially the two older ones?
Well, at the moment, the oldest one's in Africa and the middle one is in Thailand. So we're not talking on a daily basis. But I do think that there's still a gendered aspect to this, and that I would, perhaps because she's older, but also I think my daughter gives more thought to the fact that if I want to do both kids and work, I'm going to have to think about the juggle.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that's still there very much, even for young women. When I think about the graduate students at Maryland that I talk to most of the time, that is, I think, number one on the kinds of issues they're thinking about as they go out into the workforce. How am I going to do this motherhood thing that I want to do and also be the kind of worker that I'm trained for?
And are there expectations that are different in institutions, whether it be higher education or whether it be corporation? Is there an expectation? Are the expectations different for men and women?
Well, I don't know if they're different. The one expectation I do think that I see women having differently is they seem to think more still about what it's going to take, what it's going to take to do both. Whereas, I'm not sure about this, but it seems like male students also are thinking about how to be involved dad, but there's more of an expectation that this will sort of happen. You know, I don't know who's more realistic about what will happen out there. I do think one thing that's changed is I find that young women that I talk to have more of an expectation that institutions should accommodate both. An expectation that even during graduate school, that if they have a child, the institution of graduate education should accommodate that. And I actually think that's healthy. I think that there's a willingness once women are firmly established in the labor force to take a chance that things will be fair and you can have a child mm-hmm. while a graduate student that I don't think my cohort would have been so willing to do. So I think there is change, but I think, you know, it's still something that young women have to think about.
Yeah. Again, we're back to that generational business, aren't we?
Right, right.
Well,
right.
Thank you very much for talking with me. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Suzanne Bianchi is going to be speaking this evening in the Knight Auditorium of the Spurlock Museum at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. The Spurlock Museum, located at 600 South Gregory Street in Urbana, 7 p.m. tonight. This is the 2008 spring lecture of the Pampered Chef Family Resiliency Program. The program is a partnership between the Pampered Chef and the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois.